that Vachik, loud chanting is the worst. I mean, least effective. And then Upangshu chanting was even more effective. Actually, it has been mentioned that Upangshu japa is 100 times more potent than Vachik japa, and Manasya japa is 100 times more potent than Upangshu japa. That was the understanding before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the Sankirtan movement. But after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and distributed the holy name, then the concept changed. And it can be, I'll try to briefly explain how and why. The understanding is that loud chanting is more external. Then Upangshu chanting is little more internal, and Manushik or mental chanting is more internal. So the understanding was that deeper we go in to ourselves is better. But then when Mahaprabhu gave the holy name, actually holy name is Krishna himself. And when we chant the holy name actually rises from the depth of our hearts. And then it passes through our throat. And when it passes through our throats, then it chokes our throats and it breaks our voice. And then finally it comes onto the tip of our tongue and it begins to dance. This is a very wonderful poetry. There is a wonderful poem by Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing the potency of the holy name. Says Krishna naam dhare kato bol, hridaye hoite bole. I do not understand how much potency this holy name has. It forces its way from the depth of my heart and it comes to my throat and it chokes my throat and breaks my voice, and then finally it surges up to my the tip of the tongue and it begins to dance there. And so then a person becomes like a madman. And actually our loud chanting is that kind of chanting. Krishna's name is coming up from the depth of our heart and finally coming to our tongue and dancing on the tip of our tongue. So regarding that, there is a quote that loud chanting is 100 times more effective than silent chanting. That is from Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Lila 14, 14th chapter. So, we can see that how with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the concept actually has changed, and actually the whole spiritual concept turned upside down with the presentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Previously, people used to think that loud chanting was not bona fide. But that is actually true. The secret mantras cannot be chanted loudly, because the guru used to give the mantra silently in the ears of the disciples, and then the disciple, after receiving the mantra, used to just chant it silently, and it was called the Gupta mantra or secret mantra. It was hidden. There are various reasons, because the mantras are so potent that some unscrupulous people could have misused this mantra. And that's why the mantras were always chanted silently. And only when somebody did some black magic, or there is some kind of tantric practices called maron, uchaton, you know, doing harm to other people, then only they would chant the mantra loudly, not otherwise. This Gayatri mantra usually is chanted softly. But the Gayatri mantras are the mantras that that begins with Om, Swaha, or Klim, Oing, etc. But Hare Krishna Maha mantra is not a secret mantra. It is open to all. Mahaprabhu came and gave it to everyone. So that's why Hare Krishna Maha mantra can be chanted loudly. Actually, in India, there are different schools, and some people, wise guys, they think that chanting loud is not bona fide, but they're nitwits, actually. So, when the holy name is sung loudly, then it is called Kirtan. When many people sing the holy name, then it is called Sankirtan. Now, the japa, when one is chanting japa, he must count it. One must count while chanting japa. But Kirtan is sung without counting. Japa is done with counting, but Kirtan is done without counting. It's understandable, we always practice that. Then, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that his devotees were afraid of dangerous Kali, then he gave them the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and instructed them to sing that mantra loudly with various musical instruments and dancing. This is a quote from Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Chaitanya Shatak. So that shows that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually instructed his followers to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra loudly. So if anyone comes up with an argument, actually someone in Belgium is coming out with that argument. He got this understanding from someone in India. And so he is also saying that the loud chanting is not bona fide and so on and so forth. But here is the proof. Mahaprabhu himself has given the instruction. In order to avoid the influence of Kali, Mahaprabhu instructed, chant the holy name. Many people get together and chant the holy name together with the accompaniment of various instruments and then dance in ecstasy. It has been another place in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it has been described, when Mahaprabhu gave the holy name, Prabhu kahe kohilam ei maha mantra, iha sabe japogiya koriya nirbandho, iha hoite sarvasiddhi hoibe tomar, sarvakkhon baloithe vidhi nahi ar. Mahaprabhu gave the holy name, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and then he said that now you all becoming fixed up, you chant the holy name, chant this holy name. Iha sabe japogiya koriya nirbandho. His first instruction was you all chant the japa. Iha sabe japogiya koriya nirbandho. And then he said, iha hoite sarvasiddhi hoibe tomar. From chanting this holy name, you will attain absolute perfection. And sarvakkhon bolo ithe vidhi nahi ar. And then you chant this mantra loudly. Bolo, the word bolo means loudly chanting. Sarvakkhon bolo ithe. Chant it in kirtan all the time. And then there is no rules and regulations. Vidhi nahi ar. So Mahaprabhu's mercy came in the form of Raganuga Bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service. So when we attain that spontaneous platform, then there is no more vidhi, no more rules and regulations. Then there are a few instructions on japamalas. There are three kinds of japamalas. One is superior. Why are you laughing? There are three kinds of japamalas. Superior, medium, and inferior. So the japamala with 108 beads is called superior. The ones with 50 beads are medium, and with 25 beads are inferior. I just got this quote from Haribhakti Vilas. I thought that it would help the devotees just to have a basic understanding. I see. Then, this is also known to everyone, while chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in the bead, the index finger should not touch the bead. And one shouldn't touch the bead with the left hand, because the left hand is considered to be impure, contaminated. And one should not touch the bead in a contaminated state, like after going to the toilet. Without taking bath, before taking bath, one should not chant, touch the bead. Because according to astrology or palmistry, different fingers signify different propensities. Now, index finger is a symbol of false ego. Yeah. Because so you, when you see, I like you direct people with your index finger. Right. So when we chant the holy name, we must chant in a very humble state of mind. So let your false ego not touch the holy name. Yeah, that's why it is kept in a safe position. That it doesn't come out. And The other fingers are not a false finger. They're different, you know, like this is the finger of Saturn, this is the finger of Sun, this is the finger of Mercury. This is called Torjani. Torjani signifies false ego. This is called Madhyama, the middle one. Then Anamika. The Anamika is very submissive, this third one. I forgot the other ones, but this one I know. I don't know. Oh, well, maybe. I don't exactly know. Yeah. Even if we don't put tilak with the index finger, we put our tilak with the Anamika. And then also, one should not take the japamala. One shouldn't take the counting beads or the chanting beads in a contaminated place. That also everyone knows, that we do not take the beads to a toilet or dirty places, hang the bead outside. And that applies not only to the beads, but any sacred items. When we are wearing the garland of the deities, then also we do not take it to a dirty place. Actually, yes. I mean, for, you know, when there is a possibility of losing the beads, then it's better to keep the bead, but, you know, sort of taking it inside, but keeping the cover, cover it up properly. And actually, in Haribhakti Vilas, the instruction that has been given, that one should not even show the bead to anyone. When you chant the mantra in the beads, it should be chanted in a secretive way, right? Like covering it and not showing it to anyone. And after chanting, we should keep it in a safe place. It should be kept in a kept very carefully. And Haribhakti Vilas also suggests that one chants sitting down at one place. In one sitting, you finish your chanting. Not talk to people and pace up and down. But, you know, since we are so degraded, Prabhupada allowed us to do these things. Maybe someday we'll become peaceful and we'll be able to sit down at one place and chant in one sitting. But it's a good practice, actually, to sit in the temple room right after Mangal Arati and finish all your rounds before the greetings of the deities. That's the best way to do it. But sometimes when we are sitting down, we tend to fall asleep. Then we pace up and down a little. So gradually we will improve. It also has been described that Haridas Thakur, he used to chant actually out of 3 lakh names, out of 300,000 names, 100,000 he used to chant loudly. And 200,000 he used to chant sitting down at one place. Yes. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Yeah, that is loudly he can chant. Prabhupada also chanted pacing up and down sometimes. Actually, as I said, that you see, Here we have to also consider one thing. Hari Bhakti Vilas was written just in order to show the smarter Brahmans that this process that Mahaprabhu gave is not just some, you know, sentimental process, it's based on the scriptures. So Sanatan Goswami collected all different quotes from various scriptures through Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and he compiled that book. So Haribhakti Vilas is there, but it is understood that, I mean, it's not exactly for us to follow to the point. So as Mahaprabhu made it clear, sarvakkhon boloite bidhi nahi ar. So in Mahaprabhu's movement, the rules and regulations have become secondary, right? So that's why we put excessive emphasis on preaching, but not so much emphasis on our sadhana. Whereas if you go to the other sampradayas like Ramanujis and Madhvas, their sadhana is very strict. And their sadhana is so strict, and they spend so much time in their sadhana that they do not have any time for preaching. Now, it's a choice. I mean, are you going to be involved with the sadhana, or are you going to go out preaching? So Mahaprabhu said, don't worry about the sadhana, go out and preach. And by preaching, and by receiving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we go back to God. A safe and sure way. Yeah. Achar means not exactly sadhana. Achar means practice. You see, one way is you are just, you know, in details you are following the scriptural injunctions. That is the vidhi. Right? But practice means, you know, like, see, what Haridas Thakur practiced. He was not practicing all the achars of all the vidhis of the scriptures. What he was practicing is chanting the holy name. Right? Haridas Thakur was not, you know, sort of doing all these other things. Right? So that is another indication. Like Sanatana Goswami, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out that achar prachar duer tumi hao arjo, so you are practicing both. That is, you are preaching about the holy name and you are chanting also the holy name. So that is how, by practice, you are showing people how to take shelter of the holy name. So here, that is the achar. No, that's not proper. It's only the guru who gives the beads. So, otherwise you have your individual beads. Everybody has his individual beads. He asks, sometimes we lend our beads or borrow somebody's beads to chant. It's... Yeah. The spiritual master chants in the bead, and then he offers the beads to his disciples.
Could you explain a little bit the point two? Maybe the point that the man is
right. That's right. No, the instruction has been given that the Hare Krishna Mahamantra must be received from a bona fide spiritual master. So that's why we have the Harinam Diksha, right? Like, whenever when the devotee comes, some bhakta leader or somebody gives him a japamala and gives him the mantra and he starts chanting, right? But then after that, he receives the mantra from the spiritual master. So initiation is very important. And actually, I mentioned this, the where it is from, this quote is from, it's from Sri Radha Tantra. It's one of the Satvata Tantras, like Narada Pancharatra. So here it has been instructed that the Hare, if someone receives an initiation without receiving the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, his initiation is useless. So the first is receive, in this age, the first most important thing is to receive the holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And preferably, actually there it instructed that the holy name must be received between the age of 10 and 12. So of course, unfortunately, we came much too late in the movement. Yeah. Right, I mean, in your, from your angle of vision, you should consider him to be a Vaishnava. But from his angle of vision, he should think that it's important to receive the Maha Mantra from a bona fide spiritual master. Yes, Maharaj. They are actually Gayatri. I don't know. Actually, these are Gayatri mantras. So Gayatri mantras are not chanted loudly. But then again, you see, when Mahaprabhu came and gave the most secret mantra, the Maha mantra, made it public, then everything else has actually become open to all. Like, actually that's what happened with Ramanujacharya. He received the mantra from his guru, and Guru instructed him, told him, don't give this mantra to anyone unless he's qualified. And this is the mantra to become free from material bondage and go back to Vaikuntha. And Ramanujacharya went to the marketplace straight away, walked up to a tall, you know, high pillar and said, come everyone, I'll give you the mantra that will take you back to Godhead. And he loudly told them that, chant this mantra and go back to Godhead. And his Guru got the news and becomes furious. He said, do you know what's going to happen to you? He said, you'll go to hell because you have disregarded my instruction. You have openly distributed this mantra irrespective of the qualification. Then Ramanujacharya said, actually, let me go to hell doesn't really matter, but at least those people will get delivered. If I alone going to hell can deliver thousands of other people, then better let these thousands of other people get delivered. So that is and when the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna himself, comes and distributes that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which was the most hidden secret of the Vedas, then all the other mantras become actually secondary. Yeah. I'll take your question next. Yeah, go ahead. Of the Vedas? Yeah, because Vedas has many mantras, but there is only one Maha Mantra. And that was kept a secret. And that was, Maha Mantra is actually Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Now Vedas has an injunction that only a Brahmin can chant a Vedic mantra. A non-Brahmin cannot chant a Vedic mantra. So Mahaprabhu reversed the mantra so that anybody and everybody can chant it without breaking the Vedic injunctions of That's for the sake of convenience. Sometimes they break it. Like sometimes people are not very intelligent or sharp, so they may forget. So they break it into two and then they chant it. Yes, we do that also. In the streets we are chanting. Yeah, these are the rules and regulations according to the scriptures. It is better if we can do it, but if we can't really follow that strictly, doesn't matter. At least keep chanting. Beg your pardon? Oh, I see. That for you can, yeah, that you can do sometimes. Yes, Vasudev. Yeah, that's why. You see, Golkishore Das Babaji Maharaj was in a totally transcendental platform. It didn't really matter where he was. And his behavior also was, you know, totally transcendental. Like he would sometimes, he would just eat the mud from Ganga. So who can do that? No, the beads, the chanting bead, that the bead that you chant usually must be chanted on every day, because the, you see, the holy name is the food for the beads, and when you don't chant the prescribed numbers, then you are actually starving your beads. So that's why we shouldn't chant whimsically, we should chant the one bead, one set of beads, and just that bead. And at the most, I mean, if at all we have to use another set of beads, then the main bead that we have, we must chant at least four rounds in that bead. That is the instruction from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said that never starve your beads.
So you said that you have a shaman chanting verse, and that there is a question when you close the tradition turn off and shall it reverse also? Everywhere it's reverse?
Yes, yes. Ram, it starts with Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
And
only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave it as Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yes. Hare. Hare. H-A-R-E, not H-A-R-I. You see, Hare is the invocation, right, or address. Now, the Hare is, Hare can mean, you know, the address of Hari, and Hare can also mean address of Hara. Now, our issue, sometimes people may take it as Hari. Sambodhan of Hari is Hare. But our understanding is this is Hara that is addressing Radharani. They may. Sometimes when they say Hare Ram, sometimes they may mean Lord Ramchandra from the Ram. Hare. Yeah, Hare, they say they want to mean, they may mean as Hari, that Hare may mean Hari. That also will be proper. But our understanding is the highest. And that is, we are not chanting about Hari and Krishna. We are chanting Radha and Krishna through this Hare Krishna. General understanding is that one must keep the beads that the spiritual master gave at the time of initiation very carefully. But I lost my beads, and I was with Prabhupada in Haridwar, in Rishikesh, and I was feeling so bad that I lost, and it was only about a month and a half after my initiation. So I went and told Prabhupada, I lost my beads. And then Prabhupada said, What to do? Get another one. So I got the other one, and Prabhupada very mercifully touched it with his lotus hands, and still, by Krishna's mercy, I still have that. But it's important to keep it, keep the beads carefully. Yes, Rahim. Rama? Yeah, right. Rama, and another, you know, another meaning of Rama is Ramate iti Rama. The one who does the, one who enjoys, the supreme enjoyer is Rama. So that is Krishna. So this Ram can mean Lord Ramchandra, this Ram can mean Balaram, and this Ram can also mean Sri Krishna. So actually this Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the repetition of Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Radhe. Hari?
Hari?
It says, Chaitanya Upanishad says Hari?
Hari.
I see. Well, sometimes we can understand that for the mass, that understanding, the common understanding has been given, that Hari, as I mentioned, like it can also mean Hari, but the more, even more deep and more profound understanding is that it is of Hara. Prabhupada gave that explanation, like Hara. When we say Hare, it is the Shambodhan or addressing of Hara. Yes? Whenever there is a mention of Hari Nam, then that is, that actually indicated Hare Krishna Mahamantra.
Do you know why it's not recorded in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole Hare Krishna Mahamantra?
It has, you see, there are two interpretations about that. The first interpretation is that those days, you see, like, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra was so common by Mahaprabhu's mercy, that when you said Hari Nam, everyone understood that it is the holy name. And another understanding is that Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami was careful, like Mahaprabhu came and distributed it to everyone. But a time will come when people will become very demoniac. And then, you know, like he was hesitant, you know, like that unqualified people, you know, taking the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Or another consideration also is that when you write in poetry, like Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita in poetry form, right? So in poetry, you know, to again and again to repeat, you know, the full mantra is, you know, is impractical. So that's why he used symbolic expressions like Mahamantra, Harinam, etc. Even in Chaitanya Bhagavata, it has been mentioned only once. Only once it has been mentioned, the full mantra has been mentioned, and says, Mahaprabhu says that I gave you the mantra, now you chant it, and from this mantra, you'll attain all perfection, and chant it all the time, loudly, and there is no need for rules and regulations. Yes. Yeah, that's, you're right. Krishna mantra hoite have shamshar mochan, Krishna mantra hoite pave Krishna rocharan. Right. Right. With that Hari Nam or Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna mantra signified the Sholonam Bhutrishakkar Maha mantra. So, there are a few more points. I'll cover them, then I'll invite more questions. It is better to chant sitting down at one place. Try to concentrate on the sound vibration as much as possible. Must avoid the 10 offenses. I don't want to elaborate that here. I'm sure everyone knows about the importance of avoiding the 10 offenses. When many people sing the Maha Mantra together, then one person should lead and others should follow. We follow that principle. Sometimes two persons can lead also. Like one day we went on a Harinam in London, and Ajamil Prabhu and myself were leading together and others were following. You remember? Then another thing is the instrument should follow. I'll just read this out, then I'll have more time. Instrument should follow, but not drown the Maha Mantra. Sometimes it happens, like the sound of the instruments, like wampas, and especially wampas. I mean, some people come and bang it so hard that you don't hear the Maha Mantra. All you hear is the banging of the wampas. So actually the instruments are there to enhance the music, not drown the music, not drown the Maha Mantra. One must chant Panchatattva Mantra before chanting the Maha Mantra. Then nothing should be added to the Maha Mantra. Sometimes I notice there is a tendency to sing Bolo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like devotees add this Bolo, or, but it's not proper. Prabhupada, I'll give you an example. It was in 1977, Kumbh Mela. Prabhupada was in Allahabad. And devotees, we were having a wonderful Guru Puja. It was ecstatic. Prabhupada was sitting there, and devotees circled Prabhupada, and we were chanting. One devotee was leading very beautifully. Very nice Kirtaniya. And it was all very ecstatic. And then all of a sudden he started chanting, Bhajo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada just stood up and stopped him there. And he shouted, stop that. And then he kept on for about a half a minute, he just kept on shouting at him, where did you learn that Bhaja Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? And then Prabhupada said that don't ever add anything to the holy name and don't subtract anything from the holy name. Chant the holy name just as it is. He said the deviations start like that. Like there are so many deviations in India. Bhajan Nithai goes such and such, and there's so many, and it's all the deviation from. Yeah. That's after that, Prabhupada actually even stopped this bhaja with Panchatattva Mahamantra. Like previously, we used to sing bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya, but then it actually happened in Vrindavan. One day Prabhupada told us to chant Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya instead of Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Yeah. I think actually Prabhupada was there, and in front of Prabhupada they chanted Jaya Dvaita. Prabhupada didn't object. That's an addition. I don't know how it actually came. The other day, actually, Tamakrishna Maharaj and I were discussing about that. And most likely, it came, you see, Prabhupada asked Pradyumna to find out the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, Panchatattva Mantra. And Pradyumna couldn't find it anywhere. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, he only could find Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So I think, you know, it's Pradyumna's, you know, doing. But then again, since Prabhupada didn't object, I thought that, you know, Sri Advaita and Jaya Advaita doesn't make much of a difference as long as the names are intact.
It's in the books, and these are the ones they
read. Right.
But, well, they don't read Bhagavad Gita, they just read the Sri Advaita.
Right. I mean Jaya. Jaya Advaita.
No,
I mean, you said instead of bhaja, there is no bhaja, there is Jaya Advaita. We sing Jaya Advaita.
No,
not
at the beginning of the mantra. Oh. I don't think it's written on
Bhaja
Sri Krishna Chaitanya. It's written on Sri Krishna
Chaitanya. Right. And then Jaya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vaishadi Gauri Bhakta Vrinda.
So why do we sing Jaya Advaita? Because we probably introduced it. We never objected, but why should we?
I don't. Yeah, that's right actually. That's true. Yeah, we can bring it up. Yeah, I'll take this question. Huh? Oh, I see, I see. That's what my feeling also. Like Prabhupada didn't really care.
You know what I've heard? Arjuna Ji came back to Martin, 77. And he told us, Jaya Advaita, and you can also say, you know, Nitya Guru Radha Shyam Mantra, which is so unbonafide. You can chant that too, but Nitya Guru Radha Shyam Jaya Krishna Balaram.
Yeah, Prabhupada actually did that.
He did?
Prabhupada said that. That is the mantra of our deities in Krishna Balaram Mandir. Bhajan Nithai Gaur Radhesham Jai Krishna Balaram. And Prabhupada even said that the Gurukul boys, when they go to bathe in Jamuna, and they can march by saying Bhajan Nithai Gaur Radhesham Jai Krishna Balaram. Yeah, Ajamil Prabhu. There's no addition. It's the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra sung in a particular tune. Like it goes, I mean, classical music, you know, you can apply classical tune to Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and it goes like that. And actually the way the early days Sankirtan used to take place was pure classical. Like, you know, the Garan Hati, Rani Hati, the tunes that Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Thakur invented, they are actually very, you know, very elaborate. Yeah. Like it, you can, you know, like A of Hare, you can extend it. It may sound very surprising, but it's a fact. Prabhupada never really sang Nitai Gaur Hari Bol. In none of the tapes you hear Prabhupada singing Nitai Gaur Hari Bol. No, he did not. That's bona fide. But, you know, like, later on we added a lot of things like Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, and so on and so forth. You know, it's firing up, you know. Kirtan, but yeah, Prabhupada, actually once in Bombay, Prabhupada said about Mangal Arati Kirtan, Prabhupada said that Sankshara Davanala and other prayers should take half the time and remaining half will be Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And he said that chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra as much as possible. It depends how, you know, like if you can sing twice within half the time, then go ahead and do it. First of all, dancing is never funny. The people, those who think that the dancing is funny, they are actually funny. Dancing is actually the external manifestation of internal joy. When somebody internally feels the ecstasy, then externally that ecstasy becomes manifest in the form of the dance movements. Now, there are some people, those who are actually very hard-hearted, those who are real static, they cannot really understand what ecstasy is. So they think it's funny. Another thing is about women dancing. You see, in the Vedic time in India, the women never really came out so much. So it was rather unusual. But now in the West, since there are so many women devotees have joined Krishna consciousness movement, you direct, yeah, okay, I ask the question. Yeah, that point actually was brought up by Harikesh Maharaj in the last GVC meeting. And it was because in few occasions Prabhupada stopped devotees chanting Jai Radhe. And Prabhupada, I never heard, but I heard from somebody, Prabhupada said that we do not address Radharani directly. We want to see Radha and Krishna together. Maybe Brahmananda Prabhu can throw some light on that.
Well, as you mentioned before, I think the best thing is to chant what Prabhupada chanted,
right,
not anything more than that.
Right.
So we have Prabhupada's tapes and we hear what he chanted. And
repeat that.
He chanted only very few. He didn't chant, like you said, Nittai Gauranga.
Nittai Gauranga.
Nittai Gauranga. Or Jai Radhe.
Yeah.
So I don't chant these things, and I just want, I wouldn't say they're bad, sinful, but at the same time, safer to just do as the previous acharyas have done. I mean, there are philosophical, very heavy philosophical issues behind these things.
Mm.
As Maharaj said about we want to see Radha and Krishna together. That is Vaishnava, Gaudiya, Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. And Jai Radhe, even in Vrindavan, Prabhupada would not say Jai Radhe, he would say Hare Krishna, even in greetings, in ordinary greetings.
And
both are Krishna and Vishnu is same, so that doesn't make so much of a difference. You can say Vishnu Bhakti or you can say Krishna Bhakti. The main original mantra as written in the book says Vishnu Bhakti Pradedevi. But since we are very attached to Krishna, sometimes we may say Krishna Bhakti Pradedevi. With the understanding, actually when we say Vishnu, we actually address to Krishna. Because our main attachment is to Krishna. And Krishna and Vishnu are non-different. Yes.
What about the song, Varanga Bolidevi, about the song in
maybe Rohini Nandan Prabhu will answer that question.
Well, in keeping with what the Maharaj is saying, the Nitai Gauranga is included in the Panchatattva Mahamantra. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adivida chapter 7, Prabhupada there is very explicit. He says you've got to chant the whole Panchatattva Mahamantra, that's all the five names. So that would be but personally, I just commented to Rasana, I like seeing Nitai Gauranga, but the Lateshka. So
actually, in Gaudium what they do, but as Brahmananda Prabhu pointed out, I think it's very appropriate. Like, we are actually Prabhupada. I mean, we just do what Prabhupada did. And we don't really care what others did. Or we are happy, you know, like, just following Prabhupada's footsteps. Prabhupada didn't say, chant Jai Radhe. We don't chant Jai Radhe. Nitai Gauranga, etc., etc. I mean, it's so much better to chant the whole Panchatattva Mantra or whole Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because it's the total address.
What about
Nitai Gauranga
Bodhi Devi?
That's why we sing that. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that in Mayapur and Vrindavan, we must sing that mantra during the Arati. Actually, you see, chanting mantra in kirtan is one thing and chanting bhajan is another thing. Right? Sometimes we chant the bhajan given by the predecessor acharyas. Like as you said, Gauranga bolita habe pulaka shori. We don't just say Gauranga, Gauranga, but we say, we sing the whole song displaying his mood, how he is experiencing the joy by chanting, uttering the name of Chaitanya. And they can, because they have a very intimate relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a direct relationship. That's why they can write like that. Like Nityananda Prabhu calling Gauranga, and we are calling Gauranga, there's a big difference. Nityananda Prabhu knows Gauranga, but we do not know Gauranga. So that's why we are simply, first we are trying to develop that relationship through chanting the Panchatattva Mahamantra and Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because why I feel that we should be a little strict, because this is how a lot of deviation may creep in gradually. We are the first generation after Prabhupada, right? And what may happen after say 10-20 generations if we are not careful. So it is better to set a very strict standard and let that standard follow on for, let the others follow that standard for 10,000 years to come.
Well, the traditional Gaudiya Math Kirtan, the Gaudiya Gaur and Gaurus, I mean, there are Maharaj, he said, I don't know, Krishna is one
of the two. Are you saying that?
Gaudiya Math sing, Narayan Maharaj also sing Jai Radhe, etc., etc. But the thing is, I mean, as I said earlier, it's safer to just follow Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada actually said that, you know, Brajvasis are very elevated, so they can address directly to Radharani. They can address Radharani directly.
But we are not very advanced, so we maintain a distance and we do not try to imitate their behavior. Oh, I see. He doesn't know how to go, is all right. Like, that's the end of the kirtan. So that's all right. But I just cited an example. Prabhupada didn't even sing Nitai Guru Hari Guru. So, but, I mean, at the end of the kirtan, it's all right. You know, they're concluding, asking everyone, that don't stop chanting. Keep on chanting Nitai Guru and the name of Hari. Yes. Yeah, that's what Gaudiya want. That's the Kalmi production. On the film on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
Yeah.
That's the Kalmi production. And they don't have any understanding. I mean, they just presented Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his life. But it's not absolute, it's not that bona fide actually. Since you don't have anything, you know, we are presenting that. But as I mentioned, like, you see, Mahaprabhu along with his associates, the way they dealt with each other, we cannot actually imitate that dealing. Right? As I said, like, Nityananda Prabhu, Prabhu calling Go Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, calling Chaitanya or Go, and we calling Gauranga, there's a big difference. You see, Nityananda Prabhu, you know, like, it's like, you know, a child calling his father, father. Right? And somebody else calling that same person father. It doesn't really mean the same thing. And that is the meaning of sambandha. You see, our address has a relationship to back it. Right? Like a father, when a son calls out, calls the father, you know, it is a, there's a relationship to back that address. But a person who doesn't have any relationship and calling out father won't really make any impression in the mind of the person who is addressing to. Whereas, you know, the son, when the son calls out father, you know, he goes, I mean, he really feels it in the heart. The same way, you see, like, we, our calling out Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name solely depends on our relationship with Chaitanya. And we have not as yet been related to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to call him directly. Like, we haven't become related to Radharani to call her directly. So that's why now we are chanting the mantra. To get purified and develop the relationship, these mantras are actually prayers. Now we are praying. Now we are praying. We are not directly calling them. So that is the difference. Like, for instance, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami used to sing Bhagavatam and other scriptures to the Goswamis in Vrindavan. And each shlok he used to sing in 3-4 different tunes. And they used to, I mean, that is, you see, like, when one is an expert in Indian classical music, he can present, you know, the same words in different moods. They're called, ragas means the moods, depicting different moods. And actually it is so sweet when they sing these mantras. It's very, very sweet. I mean, there are classical songs, most of the classical songs are actually singing the mantras, Sanskrit. Words used to be Sanskrit in the past. But later on, due to the Muslim influence, they started using their language, using the same tune, but using Urdu and Farsi, the Muslim languages.
That's how the Indian classical music got distorted. But in the past, actually, all the mantras used to be sung in classical tune. And they are very, very beautiful. Actually, just saying a mantra and singing a mantra is a big difference, especially if the person is a good singer. And they all were good singers. All of Mahaprabhu's associates were fabulous singers. Like Ramananda Rai was, he was a great artist. I mean, he was such an expert. I mean, he used to teach dancing to the dancing girls of Jagannath Temple. Narottam Das Thakur, he was such an expert singer that he started a new school of music called Ranihati. And I'm sorry, called Garanhati. Means style of music. So there are, these people are great, and that's how they have conquered India at that time. Like their preaching was so completely based on music. And they would go and, you know, have a huge festival of music. And thousands upon thousands of people would come and participate. And, I mean, they would just spend our days together. Their festivals used to be the festival of music, actually. And that's how they used to preach. Yes, sir. Okay. Sachin,
could you explain about those problems? I heard also that Narottam Das Thakur started Gaura Lila. After that time, there was only this Rasa Lila going on. Is that correct?
Yes, they started presenting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. And that is how this Padavali Kirtan started. Now, Padavali Kirtan is through music, you know, presenting Mahaprabhu's pastimes. They used to depict Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And they're actually very, very beautiful. If you can understand the words, I mean, it brings tears to your eyes. And beautiful music.
What their theme there? Was just that, did they have a stage or so on? I'm asking because we are thinking of presenting Krishna consciousness in public programs, so we might learn.
Well, what they used to mostly have, the goal is, the way they used to present Mahaprabhu's pastimes is by singing Mahaprabhu's pastimes in a group. And people would sit down and they would begin with Gaura Chandrika invocation, and that would go on. It's pure classical music, and then they, through music, they would depict Mahaprabhu's pastimes or Mahaprabhu's pastimes with his associates. Like, and they were, I mean, there were so many wonderful musicians like Basu Ghosh. And also, the Goswamis were great musicians. If you are not a musician, how can you write such poems? Mm-hmm. And Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they're all great musicians. I'll take Damodar's question. Oh, I am sorry. Rasa Prema Prabhu.
When you look backwards in the history of Krishna consciousness and evoking all those with acharyas, we are chanting the poems from or reading the literature from, we acknowledge, because this is our understanding of Krishna consciousness, that this is our history of Vaishnava.
And this is our Krishna consciousness. We don't know anything else, but we can only see that it's very dynamic. Process, it has been evolving and developing, and it is my understanding that spiritual energy is dynamic and is creative, and so when we look forward, I wonder how to accommodate in one way the rigidity of ISKCON for 10,000 years and the dynamism of spiritual life, not willing to diminish the understanding of our fallen condition.
The rules or the laws in the material platform curbs one's natural propensities.
Whereas the rules in the spiritual platform enhances one's natural advancement. In the spiritual platform, the laws or rules and regulations are not to oppress him, but to allow him to develop, allow him to grow. Right? In Krishna consciousness, we are giving these laws. We are, in our society, we want to maintain strict laws so that people do not deviate. Right? But in the same line, there will be natural growth. Like as people will develop their Krishna consciousness, their Krishna consciousness will spontaneously become manifest. And that will be the progress. Not just by singing something out, imitating others or so on and so forth. My point is that we can, like it's a kind of, if you make a river flow, then when the two banks are very, distinctly carved, then, river flows very nicely. But if the banks are not there, then the water gets splayed out. So the same way in our movement, we want that our tendency towards, our attitude towards Krishna consciousness should develop in the right direction. And as you flow, then Krishna conscious development is not relative to whether we sing Nitai Gauranga or not. Right? Krishna consciousness development is an inner thing. And it will become manifest, by our preaching, by our behavior, by our dealings with other Vaishnavas. And then also people will come. Say, devotees will come and they will, they will write their songs. They will write poetry, glorifying Chaitanya. Like in our society now, some devotees are writing. We are not saying that no one should write anything new. But the thing, Jai Shri Radha Gopinath, we are not saying that no one should write anything new. But the understanding is that don't write unbona fide stuff. So devotees, in their mature state of state of maturity, will express their Krishna consciousness through their writing. That will happen, and that's happening. No one is stopping that. Well, not the institution, I would say the authority. The institution has an authority and they are supposed to guide the society, and they should have the right to decide what is wrong, what is right for the society and what is not right for the society. Otherwise it will be chaotic.
The GVC body?
Yeah. GVC body, temple president, senior leaders, senior devotees, sannyasis. So they are the authorities of our society, and since they are on line, they will protect deviation from the or any possibility of any deviation. They'll protect the devotees from that. I'll take Damodar and then I'll take you. Yeah, I think it will be better. One day we'll just discuss on Srila Prabhupada alone.
Because we have seen, actually, there has been a lot of things discussed today, and if we could, discuss on the topic,
that's going to
be
better. Right, yeah.
It was very interesting that in our other course, just a moment ago, he also mentioned that by having a little caution in the preaching,
Did you mention about Govardhan and family?
You're talking about music and preaching.
Yeah, actually Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that it's a culture. We have to have a cultural conquest. Like, if you just give philosophy, most of the people won't be able to understand or receive it. But if you present a true culture,
then people will become more receptive. Would you like to say something to adding in to that point?
About culture?
Yeah. The cultural presentation of Krishna consciousness.
From my own point of view, then, the programs which are starting in the southwest of England, we've started calling them the Vedic Cultural Society, because we feel also that people will appreciate Krishna consciousness in a very positive light if they see it presented in that way. One thing I've thought of myself is that we're a very new organization, relatively speaking, and we don't really have a fully developed culture. We're trying to transplant the Vedic culture into a totally foreign culture, if you like. And for us, it may be difficult, it may be easy to live more of an austere lifestyle, but those outside, then they're used to more culture. They have their culture. Therefore, without seeing an alternative culture, I don't think they'll be so attracted towards Krishna consciousness. In other words, by taking to Krishna consciousness, we don't have to give anything up, but that everything we do, that can be done, but in connection with Krishna.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. Because, and in ISKCON we actually have done that. Like we have, say in Italy, we have vegetarian pizzas. Like we are adding Krishna consciousness to their culture. And I think that's how it's going to become more palatable and easy to receive. We should not become rigid that only Indian stuff and nothing else. Prabhupada never wanted that. Prabhupada wanted to combine the East and West. That Prabhupada himself, you know, preached in English, translated everything in English. He made it presentable according to the Western culture. And actually a very important consideration also here is that all our acharyas, especially Bhakti Vinod Thakur onwards, they were very, very westernized. Bhakti Vinod Thakur himself was very westernized. He was a big government officer in the British government in India. I mean, the most important post that an Indian could get those days, Bhakti Vinod Thakur had that position. So he was always dealing with the Britishers, and he wrote in very eloquent English. I mean, he had a profound knowledge of English language. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was such an Englishman that once he was invited in the palace of the Maharaja of Koch Bihar, and the Maharaja of Koch Bihar had an English lady teaching his children the English etiquette. And that lady, after meeting Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, wrote to her people at home that here I came across an Indian gentleman who never went to England, but he is such an Englishman in his behavior. That and also Bhakti Vinod Thakur's writing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writing was so eloquent that even the English scholars would get completely bewildered that how anybody can even write in such a wonderful way. And the words that he would use, I mean, they would just convey such profound meaning as if it was just a gem in a necklace. And Srila Prabhupada also was very, very westernized. Prabhupada, I heard, his he always used to travel. I mean, even if his even when his business was not doing very well, he used to always travel in second class train. And those days, second class train was like super first class of today. only in first class, only very, very rich people would travel. And otherwise, common Indians would travel in third class. But Prabhupada would travel either second class or first class. And his dealings were, in the West also, devotees have seen that Prabhupada was not like an ordinary Indian. Prabhupada was not Indian as such. Prabhupada, to everyone, it seemed that Prabhupada was actually a Vaikunthavasi. And we have seen, like, Prabhupada's English is so beautiful when he spoke, when he wrote. Of course, his speaking sometimes had some Indian accent, Bengali accent, but his writing was so eloquent. Actually, we have to evolve a new culture, that is Krishna conscious culture. Now, all that is good from both the worlds, we have to blend it and present it for Krishna consciousness.
Because when Prabhupada was traveling on the same class train, that was when he was doing business. And later on, when he was taking Banaprasa and Sannyas, he would walk rather than take the most humble transport. So he was completely flexible. So if someone is doing business, making money, and they can drive in the Mercedes that they want. Someone else who's living in the temple at the expense of the deities should live very, very simply.
Yeah, when one becomes a sadhu, then he should.
His lifestyle changes, naturally.
But I mentioned that because it was, those days it was British domination in India, and traveling second class was, very closely connected to that. Like it is, it's only the Western, very Westernized, affluent Indians would travel second class. That's why I mentioned that. Yes, Satyam.
When you were explaining about the Tintet singer representing false ego, I was thinking of the situation where the preacher presents the beads to a conditioned soul and explains to him how he should chant. And I want to ask this question from this background and from the standpoint of the conditioned soul. Nowadays existentialism is rising from the grave again, and one of the doctrines of that philosophy is that that this world is really neutral, like a blank slate. Only what you make with your culture, what you interpret in this world, that the world becomes. For instance, capitalism is just one reading of how we should live, or communism is a reading, or atheism is a reading, or theism is a reading. It's only your mind and your forms shape this world. So people have people who know about this, and most of this is coming unconsciously, everyone starts to think like this. They think, why are they talking these fairy tales about index finger being a representation of a false ego and nourishing the beads with chanting Hare Krishna? This is, in blunt words, a criticism that we only say such things. So I wanted to know if there's some objective, realistic value. I'm putting this as, you understand the background.
The realistic value is always there. Because we are living in a relative, in a reality, although it may be relative, right? Like this finger, does signify something and does perform certain activities. Like for instance, it's not that since we are imposing some values or certain ideas on the finger, that's why that finger has become something like that. Like for instance, it is not that we put some value to your mouth, that's why you eat through your mouth and hear through your ears. Now why don't you put your value to your ears and eat through your ears and hear through your mouth? I mean, this is a reality. The mouth does the mouth's job and ear does the ear's job. So it's not that we, because we put the values and that's why it has become the mouth and performing certain activities. So the same way this finger performs certain, I mean, has some significance, because this body is not just some accidental assembly of some atoms and molecules. Right? This body is an extension of our subtle body. The gross body is an extension of our subtle body. Right? And the subtle body are, being dominated by our karma. And this manifestation of this karma takes shape in the form of gross body. Like, that's why, a man has, a certain kind of body and a tiger has another kind of body. Because of the specific karma, a man developed a subtle body which is fitting to the man's body, and a tiger develops some karma, and the tiger develops a subtle body according to his mentality or karma. And that becomes manifest in the form of our external gross body. We don't believe in accident or accidental manifestation, and then our imposing certain values or our imposing certain ideas. I mean, they actually, less intelligent people, those who try to pretend that they are actually intelligent. Yes.
Part of the philosophy is that the world is actually, and it's an idealistic philosophy, meaning that this is a world of ideas and nothing exists. And so how can, those are not less intelligent people are saying that.
This morning I was discussing the six branches of Vedic philosophy. And one branch is the Vaisheshika, which is the conclusion is the atomic theory, Paramanuvad. The whole creation is the combination of atoms, moving in different velocity and giving different impressions to our senses, according to so and so. So he's saying that actually it is true, like the whole creation is illusory, like it's just atomic, all, it's only atoms, but it's ideas that we are actually perceiving. And it's true, and that's why we do not accept those branches of philosophy individually, because that concept is not complete in itself. Then immediately we can go back to the Sankha platform, where they come to the point like this: that's the objective nature, right? That conclusion is of the objective nature, but let us consider what is the subject, because how can object exist without the subject? And then immediately you come back to the point that Atma, or the spirit soul. So that's how Vedic philosophy remains always incomplete, or any philosophy will remain incomplete unless and until you bring the spirit soul and super soul or God in it. Yeah, Shankaracharya doesn't get into the super soul. He just sums everything up as Brahma. Sarvam Khalidam Brahma. And Atma is actually, he doesn't even delve on the Atma. He says the Brahma, when it comes into the material nature and becomes influenced by the modes, then it develops a variety. Right? And when the Brahma is influenced by the mode of goodness, then that is avatar. And when Brahma is influenced by mode of passion and ignorance, then he is a jiva. And when Brahma becomes free from the modes of material nature, then it becomes Brahma, transcendental. And that is nirvana. Like you transcend the modes of passion and ignorance and come to the mode of goodness, then you become avatar. And when you transcend the mode of goodness, and then you become Brahma. That's why it is called Mayavad. They even consider Krishna as Maya. Everything to them is Maya.
Talking after your lecture about the explanation of Nirukti, that the ideas were first, and then the first were the words, and then the objects came. You remember that? But there's in the material world we see something, and then we give it a name, and the name is always after the object. So I would like to, put this question which we discussed to you. How did you mean this, that first the words are there and then the objects are there? Do you mean it in a Platonic sense, that there is...
No, in reality. In reality, this material nature became manifest through mantra.
Who spoke then?
The sages. Brahma created, then the Brahma created his son, the sages, and they, by chanting mantra, manifested this nature, I mean different aspects of nature. Like, that's why in the beginning there was sound. And also, geographically, we can define, graphically we can define it this way, that this material nature is made of five elements. Of these five elements, ether is the most subtle, right? And so the finest, like the region between the closest to the spiritual nature is the layer of ether, because that's the highest in the material nature. So when Brahma is transformed into matter, spiritual energy is transformed, then the first transformation takes place in the ethereal region, in ether. And sound comes from ether. So that's why first the transformation is in the form of sound. And then the grosser transformation takes place. So that's why, all the religious concepts accept or agree or announce that in the beginning there was sound. Like we also say that Chandangshi Jasya Patrani Jastam Vedasya Vedavid. The Vedic hymns are the leaves of the banyan tree. Urdha Mula Madhu Shakham. So the leaves are the mantras, the Vedic hymns. So the variety of objects are manifest through the Vedic hymns. And actually, this material nature is a nature of ideas. Ultimately, it is true. It is a world of ideas. I mean, we do not deny that this nature is a world of ideas. But we say that that is secondary. The most important thing is the self. Where the ideas are, who is actually developing these ideas? The spirit. Actually, it is ideas, like what we are seeing, like for instance, when we dream. In our dreams, although it appears to be real, but the actual thing is not real. What we dream? We dream actually, dream is a projection of ideas. When we are awake, we develop the ideas, impressions. And then those impressions come up on the forefront of our mind when we are asleep. And then we relive those impressions. And that is a dream. So this material nature also is a dream. Right? It is a
this material nature is a projection of the spiritual ideas. The real reality is the spiritual nature. And that ideas are projected, and we are experiencing this material nature. But the difference between dream and this material nature is that dream is singular, individual, whereas this material nature is collective dream. At this point of time, whoever is here will experience the same dream. Right? But he will experience it, every individual will experience it from his own perspective. Like, we are all, though we are sitting in the same room, I'm sitting here and I'm seeing that wall. And you are sitting there and then you are seeing the screen. Right? From individual perspective, they are all experiencing the same thing. And according to their mentality or karma, one is going through different experiences in the same platform. So ultimately it is an idea. This material nature is an idea. But it's a universal idea, projected by the universal mind, and that universal mind is actually Sri Radhakshay Vishnu. Yes, sir.
Also, like ideas, in the sense that someone's acting as Krishna's father. So, in one sense, you know, how could God have a father? But in another sense, that's reality. That, that it's the exchange of love between Nanda Maharaj and Krishna that is the reality. Not so much necessarily the external, we can say external, you know, shape of it, but actually the exchange, the loving exchange, that is the reality, isn't it, of the spiritual world. So simply, isn't it, ultimately that's what we're saying, that the reality of the material world, or anything, is the...
There is the difference is, you see, this is a relative reality, because this reality is created by God. Whereas the spiritual reality is created by Krishna, and anything that is coming from Krishna, centered around Krishna, is the reality. But anything that is centered around our false ego, that is Maya. So one, is the Krishna is the supreme controller, so whatever he does, that becomes the reality. Whereas we are also trying to create our own world. Right? But that's the dream world. That will never become reality. Because that's, you see, what is the difference between our world and Krishna's world? The difference is it doesn't tally. Our world does not really tally with Krishna's world. It's two different worlds. But in reality, it is only Krishna's world, and Krishna alone only can create the world. So that's why our business is to become Krishna conscious. Get tuned up to Krishna's consciousness, and then everything will be alright. Then we'll become transferred to Krishna's world or Krishna loka.
Prabhupada also points out that in the spiritual world, I think one actually said they don't even care if Krishna's God or not.
Yeah, right.
They just love him.
Yeah.
Isn't that the reality?
Well, right. It is a reality, naturally. But the one consideration is that, you see, that reality is beyond real reality. Like Vaikuntha, and beyond Vaikuntha is Vrindavan. And that is the extremity of the spiritual reality. Right? And the material nature is another extreme where we are at. Now, since both the extremes sometimes appear to be alike, although they are diametrically opposite, so Vrindavan and this earth planet and us, our dealings, sometimes appear to be alike, but actually they're diametrically opposite. One is super reality, right? And the other is the absolute, or rather perverted reflection. That's why the Sanskrit word used for Vrindavan is aprakrita. The material nature is prakrita.